What will it profit you to gain the whole world and forfeit your life? Indeed, what can you give in return for your life? One more time. What will it profit you to gain the whole world and to forfeit your life? Indeed, what can you give in return for your life? Friends, this morning we find ourselves in one of the more rich and dense passages in the Gospel of Mark, and that is saying something. It's also one of the pivots in this account of the good news, and we start with the reflection on the acts that Jesus has been performing, and then we move to this emerging understanding of who this Jesus is. Then we hear the first anticipation of what the political and religious authorities' response to all this will be. And then we hear the expectations on those who would follow. And so there's a lot to unpack here, so I'd like you to get comfortable. No, actually, I can't unpack all this today, so what I'd like to do is to spend some time with Jesus on the road with his disciples, and then see if we can begin to answer these challenging questions that he asks. So all of this discussion takes place, we are told, on the way. On the way. Now, that phrase, on the way, has multiple meanings in Greek as well as in English. It does refer to a physical path, something that you can walk on, a road. But it also points to a way of being. A life lived in a particular direction. And so when I hear this passage, I imagine that Jesus is on the way with his group of students and they're walking up a dusty road. And I imagine that, like with every class, there are a few of the students who are jostling through to get up close to the teacher to be right there. And then there's another group of students that are probably in the back that are straining to hear what this teacher is saying. And finally, there are others who are off on the side, lost in their own thoughts. And so Jesus starts off with a mostly non-threatening question. He asks, "Who do you say that I am?" Who do you say that I am? Who do people say that I am? It's easier. The disciples, they are prepared for this, and I'm sure they've heard more than a few people wonder out loud just who this Jesus could be. And so they offer what comes to be a litany. They say, John the Baptist, maybe it was the beard. They say Elijah or one of the prophets. So far, so good. But then Jesus ups the ante, because he's even more interested in what his followers believe. And so the next question, the question that might have stopped them in their proverbial tracks was this: "But who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am?" I imagine silence at this point. And it's Peter who meets the silence with, "You are the Messiah. You are the Messiah." Amazing, this Peter. I mean, he's right. And this is a really big deal. In fact, in Mark's gospel, this is the first time since those opening sentences that this word Christos is used. Christos, the Christ, the Messiah, the Anointed One. But only if Peter had stopped there. Quit while he was ahead. But I think I know why he didn't. Because of what follows, right? Because this is also the first time in Mark's gospel that Jesus tells his followers what happens to someone who acts in the name of love. Because then Jesus proceeds to, well, I really don't know of any other way to say this, but he proceeds to destroy their world as they know it. For here's the way ahead for this person whom they have loved perhaps more than anyone else in their life: great suffering, rejection, death, and then this incomprehensible rising again from the grave after 3 days. And so this time, like every time, the disciples refuse, right? They refuse to believe that this could be true. That cannot be the way. That is no way for a Messiah to live, let alone die. I can kind of imagine Peter doing something like, you know, drawing him aside and saying something like, "Shut up, Jesus. Don't you know that this kind of talk can get you killed?" Well, yes. Yes, he actually does know that. And so this is what he tells Peter and the disciples in no uncertain terms. "Get behind me, Satan." Crushing, right? Jesus says, in essence, "You are not pointing to the end that I am." And then the discussion is not just between Jesus and Peter or Jesus and the disciples. He then turns to us, to you and to me, and says, "Do you all understand that this is not just about me? This is what it takes to follow me, to live in the name of love." Right? He says, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life?" And so this is where I've been spending time this week, on the way with Jesus and these questions. What good is it to gain the whole world, but then to forfeit your life? Right? The Greek here is psyche. It referred to the essence of a person that was with them when they were alive, but not in death. Psyche, yourself, your life, your soul. Really, what can you give in return for who and whose you are? Now, one way of answering this question historically comes to us from those European reformers, right? Like Ulrich Zwingli and Martin Luther. And they might argue that there is, in fact, nothing we can give, that it is grace and grace alone that meets that gap. There is truth there. And there are also maybe more, because in this passage, Jesus points his disciples, points the crowd, points all of us gathered here this fine Sunday morning to an uncomfortable truth. That there are ways to respond to the gift of our life, that there may in fact be infinite ways to respond, but they all find their form in one shape, that of the cross. Now, there are many, many ways to understand the cross, let alone what Jesus is meaning for us to understand in this passage. But I'd like to focus on just one way this morning, that of sacrifice. Now, depending on your background, right, if you grew up in church or what experience you have of sacrifice, this can be challenging to hear. And just maybe for those of you who just begun coming to All Souls in the last several months, you might be wondering if this really is the church you thought it was. But I want you to stay with me now. Because what I believe Jesus is talking about when he speaks of taking up one's cross is the very kind of sacrifice that he lived. The kind of sacrifice in which you give something of great value for something of even greater value. You give something of great value for something of even greater value. Which sounds okay until we are confronted by the ways and practices of the world around us, right? This kind of sacrifice is not always looked upon kindly. For when you reveal too much of this world, what God cares about, what Jesus lived and died and rose again for, frankly, it's not always met with open arms. For when we give witness that it is the alien, the stranger, the vulnerable, the imprisoned, the immigrant, the indebted, who is deserving of care, compassion, dignity, attention, support, well, this is often met with skepticism. You can't really live like that. It's so unrealistic. And sometimes it's met with downright hostility. But friends, the context of this passage shows us just where we are to take up the cross. It's not just here, among the people we love, in this safe space. For where did Jesus tell the disciples how they were to follow him? It's on the way to the villages of Caesarea Philippi, right? This Roman outpost. This was not neutral space that he was in. And so it is that it's in the conflicted, the tumultuous spaces in our lives and in this world that Jesus asks, what could you give in return for your life? To what end are you giving it? It would be difficult to follow, and it'd be easy to lose hope if we didn't see signs of people living their lives in this way in the name of love around us. It's why I find returning to this community to be so inspiring. It was like this last spring watching this parish struggle and stretched when we were asked by members of this wider community to care for and to temporarily house immigrants who are seeking asylum in this country. Over the course of the spring, we listened and conversed and discerned. And it was not easy, but we decided. And so this summer, a room was remade in our parish house, and folks from this congregation were trained, and we are now ready to offer Christian hospitality with those who have been released from the ICE detention center in Richmond and who are awaiting this next step in their immigration process. And I am aware that several in this community in the last few years have dramatically and courageously changed the courses of their lives because of these questions that Jesus asks. Some have set aside career paths, right? Like big time, high status, crazy money jobs, because they felt called to use their gifts and talents to serve broader and more pressing needs in the wider community. And along the way, they have been told, one way or another, you have got to be kidding me. That makes no sense. It's like the wisdom of Paul of Tarsus has come to life when he writes that the way of the cross will seem to some folly, to others a stumbling block, but to those who follow, it will be liberating truth. Others in this parish have set aside long-term academic pursuits, right? Doctorates and postdocs, because they got to this point where they realized that it wasn't where their gifts fully met the hunger of this world. And these have been courageous, full of heart decisions to give up livelihoods and academic pursuits of value for something of even greater value. And I'm also acutely aware that some in this parish family have chosen to give themselves intensively right where they are. Now, this may not be as dramatic, but it is just as courageous. For we have several here at All Souls who have given their heart, mind, soul, and strength to provide care and compassion for a parent or for a spouse whose very self is deteriorating in front of them. And they have remained. And this is the kind of sacrifice that Jesus is asking us about. This is the kind of unrelenting, freely given compassion that is the way, the purpose, the end that our lives are to be given towards. Friends, you and I have been given life. We did nothing to earn it or to merit it. and yet have received it. How will we use it? This gospel asks us hard questions, and it reminds me of something that Mark Twain is to have said, that many people are bothered by those passages in Scripture which they cannot understand. But as for me, I always notice that the passages in Scripture which trouble me most are those which I do understand. This, for me, is one of those. To what end are we, you and I, giving our life? For what purpose? Friends, tomorrow, as you may know, is Monday. And Tuesday will follow, and Wednesday just as surely. What I hope is that on Wednesday, or maybe it's on Friday, or maybe it's next week, or maybe it's next month, but somehow we have an encounter with a family member, or a coworker, or a friend, or a stranger. And this question that Jesus asks remains with us. Because no matter our age, or our station, or our ability, this is the question that must remain for as long as we draw breath. What will we give in return for our life, for our very self? To what end? To what end indeed?